Welcome everyone, and thank you for joining us for today's webinar, Waste Not, Want Not, Strategies to Reduce Waste for Increased Profitability. My name is Chase and I will be moderating the session today. Now on to today's speakers. First, I am pleased to introduce Andrew Herrig. Andrew serves as Senior Director of Sustainability, Tax and Trade for the Food Marketing Institute and the Food Waste Reduction Alliance. He is responsible for lobbying Congress on behalf of FMI members with a primary focus on sustainability, agriculture, taxes, trade, and pensions. Prior to joining FMI, Andrew was an associate trade advisor and speechwriter for the Senate Finance Committee. Next, I would like to introduce Jeff Chilton. Mr. Chilton is Vice President of Professional Services here at Alchemy. He brings over 30 years of experience in the food industry, specializing in food safety, quality assurance, and plant management. Jeff has consulted with hundreds of food manufacturing firms to develop and enhance their food safety and quality programs. Jeff is a certified SQF auditor, SQF consultant, preventive controls for human food lead instructor, and International HACCP Alliance lead instructor. Welcome, Andy and Jeff, and thank you for joining us today. During today's presentation, Andy will walk us through the results of Food Waste Reduction Alliance's biannual food waste research study. He will talk through the impact of food waste across the food industry and discuss incentive programs to help minimize lost profits. Then Jeff will cover waste assessments, areas for improvements, and best practices to help you reduce waste in your operation. And then finally, there will be a Q&A session at the end of today's presentation. With that, I again would like to say thank you for everyone for joining today's webinar, and I will gladly turn it over to Andy to get us started.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it. I think maybe to start out, it might make sense to talk a little bit about the definition of food waste. It's one of those things that we all sort of know instinctively what it is, but I think it can help clarify our thinking around it to actually hear the definition. So according to both the United States Department of Agriculture and the UN Food and Agriculture Organization, food waste is the discarding or alternative non-food use of food that is safe and nutritious for human consumption. And that can occur anywhere along the supply chain, from the farm all the way up to consumers. And this is really a global problem that every country faces. In less developed countries, it often occurs at the field level where farm yields are impacted by lost product. In the United States, we have the problem of abundance. And our food waste largely occurs at the consumer sector, with them being responsible for about 40% of overall waste. And then manufacturing, retail, restaurant and food service, and the agricultural sector playing a slightly smaller role. But it's shocking to look at exactly how extensive this problem is in the U.S. The estimates are that between 25 to 40% of all the food that is grown, processed, and transported will never be consumed. And that accounts annually for about 60 million tons of waste that ends up in landfills. And that's pretty shocking. And it is the number one source of municipal solid waste right now in landfills. To put this in a little bit more perspective, on a household basis, most households throw away 20 pounds of food a month, which costs them about $2,500 a year. And you can see in a world where we're trying to feed more people using less resources and in a more sustainable way, why this would be such a concern. The amount of inputs and the amount of impact that wasted food has, if you can turn it around, would really play a huge role in feeding the hungry, not only in the United States but throughout the world. Again, I think the most shocking aspect of this is that so much of the fresh water used in agriculture ends up going towards food that is wasted. And so when you have a situation this big, obviously government is not going to ignore it. And we have seen, in fact, that they have not. The United States, through USDA and EPA, committed in 2015 to halving the U.S. food waste totals by 2030, so cutting it by 50%. By 2030, which is a significant reduction. And we've also seen states and local governments jump on this issue as well. Massachusetts passed a landfill ban for food that's in effect and that retailers and manufacturers in the Commonwealth have had to deal with. Now, part of the problem with these commitments is it's not the government itself that's obviously going to have to address this. They're going to look to industry to help. And industry is actually already engaged in this issue in a pretty aggressive way. So the food industry has formed what's called the Food Waste Reduction Alliance. And this is headed by three industry associations. My organization, the Food Marketing Institute, which represents retailers and wholesalers, the Grocery Manufacturers Association, which represents food manufacturers, and the National Restaurant Association. And I think these associations form sort of the choke point in the food supply chain between the field and the consumer. And so as this issue became more and more a part of the business environment, and make no mistake, this is absolutely a business issue as well as sort of a broader corporate social responsibility issue. Any food that comes in the back door and doesn't go out the front door as either a finished product or in the hands of consumer, that's going to result in the loss of profits. It's going to result in additional costs in terms of moving that product to landfill or finding some other disposal for it. So it is absolutely a dollars and cents issue as well as a broader environmental issue. But as this issue sort of became a larger business issue and a larger social issue, FWRA was formed to address this in 2011. And really the goal was to bring together more than 30 manufacturing, retail, and restaurant companies, along with advisors from the hunger community, waste management community, and different areas that have an impact on food waste overall, to share ideas on how to reduce food waste in each industry sector, to come up with projects where we could collaborate, but I think most importantly of all, to really collect data and start to get a sort of a baseline for the industry so we can really understand where the problem lies at both the store level, the manufacturing level, or the restaurant level. And the FWRA has three pretty simple goals that are based on EPA's food recovery hierarchy. First one is to reduce the amount of food waste generated. Second, increase the amount of safe, nutritious food donated to those in need. And finally, to recycle unavoidable food waste, diverting it from landfills. And as I mentioned, this is based on the EPA's food recovery hierarchy. This is a really helpful diagram that demonstrates the way that companies should focus their efforts on addressing food waste to have the maximum impact on both environmental conditions and also hunger. So obviously the first one is source reduction. It's best not to create food waste to begin with, but if that's unavoidable, to donate it to feeding hungry people, failing that to animal feed, and then the next level is either industrial uses or composting, and then finally landfill or incineration. That is obviously the least preferable option of all, and that's what's creating a lot of these problems. But again, I think this is a really useful guide as you start to develop programs within your company to always keep in mind. And sometimes it's unavoidable that, you may not have the ability to donate food because of a location or because of the resources in an area, so you have no choice but to divert it into an industrial use. But, again, important just to use this as guidelines for your programs as you develop them. And so as part of the FWRA's effort, as I mentioned, was gathering data. And I think this is really interesting to give you a snapshot of where the industries are in terms of food waste. And I would caution a little bit as you sort of benchmark yourself against these efforts to remind people that basically the survey this comes from, which was released a couple weeks ago, which is the FWRA 2016 Food Recovery Survey. This survey had a limited number of respondents who were mostly FWRA members, and these are probably the ones who are most engaged in these efforts. So it may not reflect the industry as a whole. It may reflect sort of the leading edge of it. But I do think it is an interesting snapshot of where people engaged on this issue are right now. So if you look at this right now for the destination of food waste, the manufacturing sector is doing a fabulous job of recycling. And that has a lot to do with the structure of the industry that makes it very conducive to recycling. Donating food is a little bit tougher. Finished product can go to donation, but inputs can't always do that. And so really structure has a lot to do with this, and you can see that also plays over when you look at the retail side of the equation, where there's a much higher level of donations. That's because we actually we have the finished product on the shelves, and when we take it off, it's usually because it's out of date or maybe there's a ding in the package. So, the business models and the framework of the industries really influence how these numbers come in. But I think what's heartening is on both cases, we've seen declining levels of disposed of food since we did the first survey in 2012 and increasing levels of both donated and recycled food. And so all of the companies involved are making investments in this. Again, this isn't just a corporate social responsibility issue. This is a business issue for them. So it makes sense to not only make these investments, but to really think about it in terms of ROI, because there actually is a return on these. And you can see the areas of investment where people are focusing on. Right now, manufacturing is pretty evenly divided among reducing source reduction, disposal, donation, and animal feed. Recycling, where it already has really pretty impressive resources in play, a little bit lower, and there's some other factors as well that are lower investments. When, if you look at the retail sector, we're spread pretty evenly too, with a stronger emphasis on food donation and recycling. That's pretty standard. That's what we've seen the areas of investment look like for the past few years, and it's stayed pretty consistent. I think that the manufacturing sector's food donation focus has increased a little bit as they've gotten more engaged, as they've sort of reached some of the limits of their recycling processes to kind of say, well, what's the next step? It's getting it into the hands of people, if at all possible. That being said, there are still some significant barriers to donation in place. Right here, we're just going to look at them for the manufacturing sector. I think what is most interesting here is if you look, this reflects the three surveys we've done at FWRA. We've really seen a decrease in a lot of the barriers that people were concerned about, and to the point where I think that, I don't want to say that they're insignificant, but issues like refrigeration and infrastructure are really much less important than they used to be. And liability concerns and regulatory constraints really remain at the top of the list. But I think it's pretty amazing that all the barriers except for the regulatory constraints have dropped to or below the 50% level. That means 50% of the respondents don't really consider these things constraints anymore, which is, again, I think a sign of the progress the industry is making on this front. And there is good news to address both the liability concerns and the regulatory constraints. There are incentives for food waste that as you develop these programs, you should be aware of and that you should make your management aware of and that you should look to address. The first is the Bill Emerson Good Samaritan Food Donation Act. And this is liability protection for food donors. So essentially, if you donate food and, God forbid, somewhere along the chain gets sick from it, you cannot be held liable for that donation or for any cost due to that, with the exception of cases of gross negligence or intentional misconduct. So as long as you act in good faith, this is going to protect you when you make donations to a nonprofit soup kitchen or feeding kitchen or church. One of the things people always say, they're very concerned about this, they're worried that it's going to come back on them, they don't know if the church has the resources to properly handle the food. You can still make these donations and feel comfortable that this will not come back on you. So that's incredibly important to keep in mind. I think it's something that the industry has to do more, a more aggressive and better job of getting word out about. The other one is the food donation tax credit. And this is a permanent now tax deduction that is in the law that your company can take for food you donate. And it covers the cost of the production of the food and for carrying it. Now, it's never going to make you whole, and it's not designed to do that. And by that I mean is it will always still be preferable for you to sell that product at a profit. But what it does do by covering those carrying costs is it eliminates the situation where simply throwing food away is cheaper than donating it. And we see that a lot. We hear that a lot from people is that, by the time I maintain the heat chain or I maintain the cold chain, I get it to the back of the store or the back of the processing plant. I get people there to take it away. I figure out those transportation logistics. The costs are so expensive that it's just cheaper to throw it in the dustbin and have it taken away to landfill. And the food donation tax credit, which again is now a permanent tax credit, it wasn't always, but it is now, helps cover the cost of carrying it and can really make food donation a much more effective approach to dealing with food waste. And I think now it might make sense to pause and just take a quick poll here. And the question is, in your operation, what is your estimate of the percentage of food waste? Excellent. Well, that's actually pretty good numbers. As you can see there, there's actually some pretty broad knowledge of what food waste is, the role it's playing in the industry. For those of you in the unsure category, do not feel bad. In the FWRA survey, 49% of respondents were unable to provide data regarding the quantity of food waste their companies disposed of, or they had some level of lack of confidence in that. And again, these are companies that are really engaged on this issue, so it's not something to feel bad about at all. It is still relatively new to people. So just to close it out, let me walk away with, I hope you'll think, are the key takeaways from this. The most important aspect of dealing with food waste that I have discovered in the 5 or 6 years I've been dealing with this issue is to measure. Your company needs to take the steps to measure food waste and food loss within its operations. That sometimes feels a little bit daunting, and again, sometimes you're going to do it, and it's not going to be perfect, and you're going to say, I wish it was perfect, and so I don't know how valuable it is. It is still valuable, and it sets a benchmark that you need to focus on and focus on constantly improving, and there are ways to do this. Third parties like Alchemy are there to help you with this. It's a great opportunity to bring them in, work with them to help you improve those systems. And those, again, you need to have those waste streams data in a central location. It needs to be company-wide. So, again, measurement, if there's only one thing you remember from what I've just said for the last 15 minutes, measure is the word. The other thing, the other two sort of ideas that I think are really important, reach out to your partners in the supply chain. There's going to be lots of new ideas, lots of fresh perspectives that you may not necessarily have. They may be struggling with a very similar issue, and you may find a way to collaborate. They may have already struggled with something and have an answer to it. So reach out to those partners. And finally, this is the same lesson I think we learned when we dealt with sustainability in both manufacturing and the retail sector. You need to build food waste reduction into the DNA of the company. Again, it isn't just a corporate social responsibility issue. It isn't just a business issue. It's both. And the only way to really effectively tackle the issue is build it into the company, where everyone has ownership of this issue, and everyone has it built into their goals. And with that, I thank you all for your time, and I'll kick it back over to Jeff.
Okay, thank you, Andy, and thank you, Chase, as well. And I'd also like to thank each of the participants for taking time to join us on our webinar today. I appreciate the opportunity to share about methods to reduce waste with you. Waste reduction is a classic win-win situation that's better for society and better for your company, as Andy just indicated. We have a vested interest to improve our profitability and our sustainability by reducing waste in our operations. Therefore, it's critically important to be able to raise awareness and learn methods about how do we measure and how do we reduce waste. And as we look at the poll results and the statistics that Andy shared with us today, it shows that we have a long way to go to be able to improve our results in this area. So in this section of the webinar, we're going to focus on the methods to reduce waste and talk about waste assessments, waste measurement systems, and then raising awareness of waste with all the employees. So let's start with a polling question. How do you think your waste percentage compares to your peers? But I think it's very important that you know what those numbers are, that you know what they are for your specific operation, but you also want to know what are the waste percentage best practices for the particular industry that you operate in, so you know how you compare with those results. So as we look at the results of it, we see that about a third or better, and then probably two-thirds would fall in the waste, and most significantly is 47% reporting as unsure. So, and this does raise our concern about, are we measuring the amount of waste that we have within our operations today? And then it reemphasizes the need to be able to measure these systems so we can know how we compare in systems like that. So when I was a plant manager working directly in the food industry, and one of the first lessons that I learned is you treasure what you measure. And this is especially important in the area of food waste because often companies don't measure what the key numbers are related to the amount of waste they're generating within their facility, so you don't recognize the extent of the problem and also the opportunity to be able to improve your profitability by controlling that part of the process as well. And we're going to talk about how do we reduce this waste and the measuring and the reporting system that we have. So there's two key performance indicators, or KPIs, that I really want to focus on through this process. The first one is related to the amount of actual floor waste or inedible product that's generated within your facility. And it would be beneficial for each one of your operations to be able to measure this amount of waste and inedible product on a daily basis, and not just the total amount that's going to waste, but actually measuring the amount per department or per packaging line, and also per shift, so we can make comparisons for how each of those areas within your companies are performing in the area of waste management itself. The second KPI that I'd like you to focus on is talking about product yields and the waste impact on those product yield numbers, and specifically in two areas. One is around non-conforming product, and this is where we often see a lot of companies diverting product out of the product stream into an edible or into floor waste due to the fact that it doesn't meet their specification requirements. And the key to this is making sure that we have well-defined product specifications and that your manufacturing process is capable of operating within those product specification requirements as well. So ideally, we want to be able to reduce the amount of non-conforming product that's being produced so we have less waste, or in the event that some non-conforming product is still produced, we should be looking for other alternatives of how that material could be used in terms of recycling or rework or diverting that to another source besides actually going to the landfill itself. And then the other large area that has an impact on product yields is the amount of product giveaway at your packaging operations. So when you package product, and if you have a declared net weight on that package, then you obviously have to exceed the net weight, but companies typically tend to control those net weights over the stated weight by an industry best practice of, say, 1 to 2% giveaway within that process. And if you're operating in areas higher than that 2% giveaway, then there's often an opportunity to be able to actually reduce the amount of waste that's being put in that package and create more good product that you could put into commerce as well. So as you look at this, what we encourage clients to do is look at the current waste reporting systems that you use and then help you determine, do you have any needs for additional reporting? So as the example that I shared, if you were measuring your total amount of product that was going to inedible, what if you backed up a step in that process and you measured the sources of that inedible product by line and by shift to be able to compare those results? And then we want to identify what are the right key performance indicators for your operation to measure both the waste or the inedible product and your product yields to be able to optimize your performance and your profitability within those operations. And once you establish the waste reporting systems that you need, then you'll be able to identify what is the baseline that's currently in place of how much waste are you generating. And when you generate this information, you ought to look at it in both terms of the quantity of the product that's being diverted to waste, but also the dollar value or the variance of that product that's going to waste as well. So we see how much of an opportunity we have to capture that to be able to increase the profitability for your operations as well. So once we have the measurement systems in place, then we can establish the baselines, and then we can set the goals for continuous improvement. And then on a regular basis, we could update and implement those revised goals and the reporting systems to make it most meaningful for your operation as well. And I'd like to share a real-life example for you that within our Alchemy Professional Services division, just last month, we implemented a large waste reduction project for a bakery company that produces cookies. And when we looked at the existing reporting system that that company had in place for waste management, when they evaluated the yields for that operation, it was evaluated only on the total product yield. So in this case, the company looked at the amount of product that was produced in a raw state and then they looked at how much product was expected to be packed from that amount of beginning product, and then they would measure the amount of product that was actually packed from the product itself. And that's a great starting point because you can look at your total yield as part of that process. And that did give them a number that they could use to establish the performance of the organization in terms of how much product was going to waste, and they applied a dollar value, like an average cost per pound of that product, so they could quantify the dollars that were being lost in product as well. So it was a good starting point, but what they did not do, and what could be more helpful to operations as well, is to drill down further in that process to identify where are the steps in the manufacturing process that that waste is originating from, and then where could it be saved. So specifically, as we went further into the process and looked specifically at the mixing step and then the depositing step along with the baking step and the packaging step, then at each one of those areas, then we were able to identify areas of waste and opportunities for improvement. And I'll share more information with you about that as well. And then when we looked at the amount of inedible product in the floor waste in this particular company, we were watching literally hundreds, if not thousands of pounds of product per day that were being diverted out of the product stream because of non-conforming products or floor waste or other issues, and it was being put directly in the dumpsters and sent directly to the landfills. And in this case, the company wasn't weighing any of that product going into the dumpster. So there's areas of opportunities where you're generating waste within your companies that if you could look at it in more detail, it would provide some enlightening information for you and focus on some key areas that you can improve your system as well. So when we talk about food waste, let's look at three different potential sources for this. And let's start first and foremost with the products and the processes themselves. So I spoke with you about the importance of having well-defined and accurate product specifications, because these product specifications are so important because they have to define what the expectations are for your product and the key criteria for whether or not that product is going to meet your customer expectations in terms of weights, sizes, dimensions, and other criteria that you have to meet. And then one of the key questions related to those product specifications are, does your manufacturing process have the capability to be able to meet those specification requirements on a consistent basis? And I can tell you far too many times we see stringent product specifications and manufacturing processes with wide capabilities, and the two don't match up. And oftentimes a lot of effort needs to be made to better dial in the specification requirements and the process manufacturing requirements to be able to meet that. And by doing that, what it does is allow you as a manufacturing company to be able to reduce the amount of non-conforming product that's produced and therefore diverted out of your product stream and then either sent to recycling or rework or to landfills in cases like this. So that's a key area that many companies need to focus on, along with issues such as the batch sizes being correct, whether or not you can rework that product or if you have an option to do that, and then to be able to measure those variances as well. And then the second area of food waste that we like to look at is equipment design. And that obviously most of your manufacturing processes are complex, that they have to go through numerous manufacturing steps using several different pieces of equipment and a lot of different conveyor belts and different types of material handling equipment to be able to move that product from one process to the other. So as part of this assessment process, we want to look at that equipment design and see if it's guarded or protected properly to be able to contain that product within the product stream, and look at issues like if you're transferring by product by pumps and such, whether or not we have leaking pumps or bad seals within those pumps that are causing us to lose product, or the types of conveyor systems that frequently a lot of companies just use the wrong type of conveyor belt. And as a result of that, it causes a loss of product through that manufacturing process. So we have to consider the equipment design and the material handling and transfer as an evaluation of one of the sources of food waste. And then the third one, and the one that we're going to focus on at the end of this part of the presentation, is your personnel. And people play such an important role in helping you reduce the amount of waste that you have within your operation. When you look at their responsibilities for the employee handling of that product and the product grading that has to be done at the packaging operation. So they're making split-second, real-time decisions as fast as that product's moving down those conveyor belts, whether or not that product meets that specification and it's going to go into a finished product package that you need, or if it's going to be diverted out of that stream to go into waste. So we have to raise the awareness of the employees of how important this waste is, and then make sure that we're training them appropriately to understand what the requirements are and how that product should be properly handled and graded throughout that manufacturing process. Okay, so at Alchemy Professional Services, we're an advocate for an operational excellence program that we call TOPS, and TOPS stands for Total Operational Performance System. And there's four key attributes within the TOPS system, and that is safety, and that's the safety of the food and safety of the people, first and foremost, quality, secondly, yield, third, and productivity, fourth. And then when we work with companies to help them achieve operational excellence, we base it on this foundation of safety, quality, yield, and productivity. And what we often identify are the KPIs that are specific under each one of those criteria. So the top 5 to 10 KPIs that may be related to food safety and workplace safety, and then same thing, top KPIs related to quality, yield, and productivity to help companies identify exactly what operational looks like within their operations, and then to be able to improve upon those systems as they go through that process. Specifically, when you look at that third attribute, such as the yield, this is where you have the opportunity to actually do a formal assessment to be able to identify, do we have an opportunity to improve our yield and improve the profitability of the company itself. So we often like to work with companies to complete these food waste assessments, or you can use this exact same approach internally yourself, so we would encourage you to do that also, and actually complete a formal assessment to look at where you have opportunities to be able to reduce waste in the process and to be able to improve yields throughout that process as well. So I would encourage you to do it with a team approach. So you come in and you partner with different representatives from operations and QA and maintenance and sometimes sanitation as well. So we have a good diverse understanding of the manufacturing process and different aspects of that process and what areas are going to contribute to waste. And then it's a formal assessment process where we analyze each step in the process to evaluate those sources of waste. So we'll frequently start with the flowcharts that are used within your existing HACCP or food safety plans to give a good overall demonstration of how that product's made within your facility. And then what we do is the actual assessment in the plant for each one of those steps that are identified on the flowchart to look for those sources of waste. And then we're looking for the specific root cause. So we'll go back and evaluate, again, based on whether it's related to the product or the process, or secondly, the personnel, or third, the equipment. And then for each step of the manufacturing process, looking at each one of those root cause failures, then to assign a rating with a severity for a rating for severity, likelihood, and detectability. And many of you have probably heard of the FEMA or the failure mode effect analysis, and this is one methodology you could use to create this process, because when you have waste in your process, it is a failure. So this is a good Lean Six Sigma tool that you could use as part of this evaluation process, or you could use other types of general risk assessment methodologies as well. But as you go through that process and you focus on each step of the process, then you'll be able to identify where are the key steps that you need to focus on that are generating the waste and where you have opportunities for improvements. And let me just share a few more specific examples back to the bakery company, and I'll talk to you more about those four specific steps around mixing, depositing, baking, and packaging as examples of how this assessment process proved beneficial for them. So first, at the mixing step of the process, when we evaluated several of the records that were generated at this company over the last 60 days, we actually identified that there were numerous instances where entire batches of cookies were diverted to waste because of missing ingredients that were left out during the mixing process. And the issue that we had is that there was no weight verification process. So there's an expected batch weight that if you put in X number of pounds of each of the ingredients as called for by the recipe, you're expected to generate X number of pounds in that finished batch. But there was no verification that that weight was correct at the end of that process. So the mixer itself wasn't on load cells, so we didn't have any weight verification at the mixing. And after the cookie dough was mixed and then it was dumped out into the containers to take over to the depositing operation, there was no weighing of those containers either. So we made recommendations that the companies could either put the mixer on load cells or alternatively put a platform scale in the area and then tear out the weight of the bin itself that the cookie dough was dumped into and then do a weight verification prior to taking that product to mixing and make sure that you had the correct weight for each one of those batches. And then it gave you the opportunity to be able to identify that prior to that product having more labor and more time devoted to it to where it would go through the depositing process and then through the baking process and then ultimately have to be discarded into food waste after it was cooked simply because they were unaware that they left an ingredient out. And there were a significant number of instances where that occurred. So that was one way to be able to mitigate the waste reduction at the mixing step. The second area that we looked at, specifically at an example at this company, was at the depositing step. So we had a concern that the temperature of the cookie dough was too high, and therefore you didn't get a good shape of the cookie as it went through the depositor. And typically in most cookie and dough type operations like that, they're going to control a dough temperature in the area of perhaps 68 to 70 degrees. In this case, the company was as high as like 75 degrees in many cases. And they were doing that based on other quality characteristics that they were trying to achieve within the product itself. So there was a reason for it. But what happened is when that product went through the depositing process, instead of getting one nicely formed cookie dough, so you had 11 rows of cookies going all the way across with each time the depositor dropped the cookies, then that dough would start to smear out and spread on that conveyor belt. And then oftentimes two cookies would merge together and then one cookie would become two. And then all of that product would continue to go through the baking process and then be diverted out into food waste at the end of that packaging operation. So there was an opportunity that we identified for anywhere from 3 to 5% yield increase by either one, controlling the temperature of the dough prior to depositing, or two, putting a grater on the depositing station and then recycling those misshaped doughs back into the depositor prior to the baking operation to keep it from becoming food waste. Two other key takeaways from that process. One is in evaluation of the shrinks during the cooking process, we found out that the actual cook shrinks were 2 to 3% higher than what the company had built in to their cost of goods sold standards, so they weren't accurately costing the products correctly. And then on the packaging side, again, we identified the two sources of yield loss in terms of the amount of non-conforming product that was being sorted out during the packaging process, along with the excess product and the giveaway of the waste, and the fact that they weren't measuring the actual quantity of the floor waste that was being produced. So there were several opportunities by just taking time to go through that assessment process that we ultimately identified where we felt like that company could reduce their amount of waste by anywhere from a minimum of 5 up to 10%, which could make a significant impact on their profitability. All right, so from there, once you gather all this information during the assessment process, then you can start to develop a waste reduction strategy. And that can start with the product specifications and how do we make sure that we're producing product that does conform to the specification requirements. Then secondly, it will refer to the equipment optimization, so to make sure that we've looked at the equipment, we've placed the guards to where we're using the right types of conveyor belts to keep product in that manufacturing stream. And then third, looking at that frontline workforce engagement. And this is a key area that we're getting ready to focus on and talk about as well. But raising that awareness of food waste and getting the employees involved in helping reduce that quantity. And then managing this process with the team that ultimately comes up with the right measurement system so we can have effective waste and yield management reporting. And then as we look at the quantity and the dollars of the waste that are being generated and yet saved compared to the baselines that have been established in the past, then helping demonstrate return on investment savings through that process. All right, so if we could, I'd like you to take a moment and answer another poll question for you. So the question is, do you train your frontline employees on how to reduce waste? And obviously, I know you invest a tremendous amount of time training employees on a variety of topics, but we often see this topic of waste being overlooked in the training requirements with companies. So just doesn't get the time or the attention that it needs to. And we've got about an even split, so about half and half. So it looks like approximately 50% of the companies have an opportunity to probably increase the amount of communication and training that we're doing in terms of waste reduction. So, and that's what this next slide refers to. This, we're really talking about the frontline employee impact on food waste at this point. And we talked about managing it with a team approach to where you can solicit those ideas for improvements and get everyone participating in waste reduction initiatives within your company itself, and then making waste training part of the learning plans within your organizations and actually training the employees to raise their awareness of their impact on waste and helping you reduce that and helping them understand not only what do we need to do to reduce the waste, but why do we need to do it? And what is the impact on the company profitability and on our sustainability as a society and as an economy as well? But once you help them understand the why behind it, then you'll receive the commitment to be able to participate and make it successful. And that's when we get employees engaged and we allow them to share and we allow them to start managing the process, and then we can communicate those results and then make sure that you really do have an integrated system that addresses safety, quality, yield, and productivity, because it takes properly managing all four to truly achieve operational excellence that you desire as a company. All right, so our real goal through this process is sustainability, and that's what would help our environment and our country, and it helps sustain your companies as well with increased profitability as well. And to achieve sustainability, it actually takes behavioral changes. And when you talk about behavioral changes, what you're really talking about is changing the culture of a company. And that's not always an easy thing to do. And the only way that you can change the culture of a company is to have senior management define the vision and the mission for the company of what you want to accomplish and what are your expectations for this area of waste management. And then you have to create awareness around the food waste issue, and that's where it relates to the training programs. So as you identify learning plans to be able to educate the employees through this process, then make sure that waste management is a part of those learning plans so they understand the importance of the topic and how they impact that topic. And then look at the training programs that you use. And there are certain training programs within the Alchemy platform for waste management and waste disposal as well. But fortunately, you have the ability to customize that training within your own operation, to put in your own pictures, your own content, your own information, to make it meaningful. And that way you can deliver engaging training to your employees and involves the employees and management themselves so they understand the importance of this issue. And then look at the measurement systems that you've set up. So as you've identified the key performance indicators to be able to measure this process, and then ideally, if you see that you're saving that much in product not going to the landfill and increasing the profitability of the company, perhaps you could have an opportunity to offer an incentive to your employees for their participation in that process as well. But make sure you document the profitability contributions that are driven by success. So when you establish that baseline, set your standard based on that baseline. And then when you're measuring your results in the future, you can measure your improvements against that standard and then show the positive variance that you're contributing to your company that drives the continuous improvement that we're looking for. All right, and I just want to take a moment and share one case study of a great success story that was created when Alchemy partnered with Kisco Products, which is a company that's located in Canada, and they make the freeze pops that we all enjoyed when we were kids. And still do today, hopefully as well. But Kisco produces the different types of freeze pop products, and they had issues around the production of inefficiencies and they had issues in the amount of time it was taking to train employees on various topics. And Kisco and Alchemy partnered together, and Kisco purchased the Alchemy training platform as well. So they had a full workplace safety library and a full food safety library. And then there's other courses related to supervisory and leadership and operational excellence and HR as well. So in many cases, they delivered the standardized training that was part of the core library content. But where they went above and beyond is they customized several of those programs, and they used that training platform and the delivery methodology through the player and the manager system to create custom training as necessary for specific SOPs that drove change within their operation. I mean, even things as simple as how do we change a roll of film on a packaging line, or how do we set up this piece of equipment to make sure that we avoid downtime in those situations in the past. And they got the employees involved, so they were given an opportunity to ask questions, and they owned the initiatives that they came out with. And through the improved training content and delivery mechanism as well, then the result at Kisco is they were able to have a 20% increase in production efficiency and over $500,000 in annual waste savings. That's been sustained over a number of years since this study's been done. So it was just a good example of how Alchemy partners with manufacturing companies to be able to improve your manufacturing operations and improve your return on investment for the training system as well. Okay, last, we just want to share a few resources with you as we go through this process, and then we'll be opening it up for questions and answers, so we'll have an opportunity to answer those for you as well. This slide just recognizes Alchemy's footprint within the food industry, which is quite expansive. So as you can see, that Alchemy touches more than 2 million employees in the food industry in over 20,000 locations worldwide, not only here in North America, but in 40 countries throughout the world, on a monthly basis with training delivered through the Alchemy system. And obviously, we focus on optimizing your workforce and your operations within your companies. And we do that in these four main key areas. One is in the operational improvements, just like we're talking about waste reduction as a method of yield improvements and operational improvements today. But we also have similar initiatives to help companies with productivity improvements and then utilizing that integrated top systems like we talked about for safety, quality, yield, and productivity. And then we have the core library of food safety, and then the consulting services that we do to help companies comply with GFSI requirements, along with regulatory compliance with USDA and FDA standards as well, and help you minimize your risk of a product recall or a foodborne illness outbreak. And then obviously a number of programs related to workplace safety to help keep your employees safe and reduce a catastrophic accident from occurring at your facility and ensure that you're in compliance with the OSHA regulations, and then courses that touch on human resources and compliance as well. So we're happy to share those resources with you. This slide just talks a little bit about a comprehensive solution to optimize your workforce, that it's not just training by itself, but it's actually an integrated solution that uses all three of these areas, starting with the learning, but then going into the communications and the performance. So in the learning is the actual delivery of the training programs, whether it's done in classroom or kiosk or e-learning format, but delivered in a language that the employees understand. But beyond that initial training, then there has to be communications to make sure that they really understand. And Alchemy has a great communication system with huddle guides to where supervisors can meet with their employees for just a few minutes on the floor, just to reinforce the important messages of the training that's been delivered. And then through posters and digital signage that can be placed in the break areas and other key areas of the facility to be able to provide constant reminders of that training message that you're trying to send. And then on the performance side, on coaching, Alchemy has a great coach application, which is a tablet application, to where supervisors can go out on the floor and answer questions on the tablet to verify the effectiveness of the training and or coach the employees if they need a little more coaching to understand what they really need to do through that process as well. And then on the consulting side, we have the Alchemy Professional Services division, and we have a great group of consultants that works with all different types of food processing companies through various stages to help companies identify and deliver their training needs, and then to help with assessments, whether it's waste management reduction, just like we're talking about here, but we also do food safety and workplace safety issues as well, and then developing strategies on how do we improve your operations, and then coming up with plans for sustainability to make sure that we maintain those results where those operations are improved on a regular basis.
Now on to the fun part, Q&A. When you say reduce non-conforming products, do you basically mean reduce defects?
And the answer is absolutely yes, it is. It is to reduce defects. So when we talk about non-conforming product, what we're really talking about is what are the requirements of your finished product specification. So what do you expect that product to look like? So if it's a cookie product, you know, what is the weight, the thickness, the width of that product, all of those sizing and dimension criteria that you have to have, and then to see if you're producing your product within that criteria. So non-conforming product is really all about making sure that we reduce the amount of non-conforming product. So we're producing more product that does meet our specification requirements. So we're producing more good finished product, and then we're producing less non-conforming product that ultimately is going to have to be reworked in the process if your process is capable of doing that. Or in the case of these cookies, they weren't reworking them at all, and they were just all simply going directly into the dumpster and directly to the landfill. But absolutely, it's non-conforming product is all about reducing defects and then making product consistent with your specification requirements.
Thank you for that, Jeff. Now, Andy, I do have one to direct your way. How can food manufacturers get the maximum benefit from the food donation tax deduction? What documentation should companies keep to ensure they are eligible?
Sure. So I think the absolute best way to get the most bang for your buck is to find a feeding organization in your area and build a relationship with them, because they actually often will accept product that is unexpected or that you wouldn't necessarily think of donating. FMI works with Feeding America pretty closely, and they're a fabulous resource that can help you find a food bank in your area, but there are other resources that you can also tap into. Documentation is actually pretty straightforward, so you need to know what you donated. And then based on that, you need to be able to show the fair market value of the product and the cost of goods. And there's a fairly simple formula that you plug in when you do your taxes based upon those two numbers. But this is all stuff that you would already have on hand. The same legislation that made the food donation tax credit permanent also streamlined that formula process, so it is a much easier credit to use and claim. In all honesty, in the old days, it used to be one of those kind of audit triggers when people had a lot of claims under it. That isn't the case anymore. It is much more streamlined, much more user-friendly, and actually quite simple.
Terrific. Thank you for that. Jeff, another question for you, sir. If we develop training to help reduce waste, what are the key concepts to include? How can our company ensure that employees put those training concepts into practice?
Okay, and that's a great question. So I think first you have to just create the awareness and help employees understand how important of an issue this is, not only for your company, but for our society as a whole. So that needs to be part of the content by itself. And then secondly, I think you have to drive down into what are your specific results? You know, where are your company's results in the area of how much waste are you generating? And looking at where does that waste come from? And then helping employees understand at which of those steps in the manufacturing process is that waste being generated, and what are the alternative solutions at those steps. So instead of allowing product to fall off this conveyor belt and then fall onto the floor, you know, can we look at adding a guard that would keep that product in place? But help company or help the employees understand, you know, here's where we think the key areas of waste contributors are within our companies, and what do you think about that, and what can we do to resolve that? So you actually get the employees engaged in and during the training programs in that part of it. And then last, make sure they understand how are you going to measure waste in the future, and show them the report of how you're documenting your waste and your yield management, and then make those results available on a daily or certainly on a weekly basis as well. So let employees know where they can go to see this information, to see how they're doing, and give them feedback positively or negatively, so we can continue to drive those results. So I think just the awareness in general, and then specifically, where does it come from in your plant and how can you reduce it? And then third, how are we performing would be key contents of that training program.
Well, I think we will try to squeeze one more question in. Andy, we'll send this your way. Like most manufacturers, our company has liability concerns and regulatory constraints to overcome. How do we address regulatory issues that prohibit us from donating perfectly good food?
Yeah, that's a great question, and that is a little bit of a tough lift for companies. I think, again, creating those partnerships with the feeding, with different feeding agencies is an important step. Making sure that you really understand what those barriers are and how they operate, having your legal department really make a sort of a clear presentation to you on them, on where those barriers lie. And then, unfortunately, with the regulatory barriers, you just kind of have to build that into your government relations and lobbying shops to really make those changes. I think that becomes sort of an easier process as you form partnerships with other people in the supply chain. These sort of barriers and how they impede donation become more obvious. It becomes easier to kind of go up and engage because you can demonstrate to the lawmaker what the issue is more easily. But that is a time-consuming process. But we do see that there's sometimes a lot of misunderstanding about that. So really making sure that you really understand and your legal department has really gone through what those regulatory constraints are and the way they impact you in each specific area is really vital.
Well, terrific. So Jeff and Andy, thank you so much for taking the time to join us today. Thank you again. Enjoy the rest of your afternoon.